Hi, my friends. This is Henrik Sundgren. You are listening to Red Ice Radio. It's good to be back with you again after a short hiatus, a break. We've had some amazing developments occur that I am going to make a video about. Explain a few things about what's been going on recently with me, with us, and why so little material have been coming from us in the last couple of weeks. It's all very good news, though. Very good news, so don't worry. So we're back at it, slowly getting into the work groove again. We have a pre-recorded video that Lana recorded about 3 or 4 weeks ago that will go up first at redicemembers.com. You can watch it exclusively there before we make it available on our public site, redice.tv, and on our Red Ice TV YouTube channel. We also have a new McNallan video going up here soon, you know, latest installment of Wolf Age, also won by Blonde Buttermaker, and an urgent exclusive, somewhat shorter Norse news that we are going to record tomorrow, Thursday the 27th, about the ongoing scandal in Sweden. It's the biggest security breach in the country's history that's unfolding as we speak. The prime minister might resign. The whole government might basically crumble from this. We'll see what happens. More information about this is going to be coming out during the early morning tomorrow, so we'll be monitoring that. We're going to discuss this actually with today's guest in the second segment as well and get a kind of an overview and analysis of how and why this happened. It's big news in Sweden, of course. We're also going to be doing a Weekend Warrior show here soon. Again, I know that many of you have been asking for that. I know that you guys are wanting us to get back into the groove. Myself and two guest hosts will bring you some of the latest developments in a live show. A date is not set for this yet, but it will be broadcasted live at redicemembers.com. We'll keep you updated on our websites and on our Twitter and Facebook so that you know when you can tune in to that live. All right, so on to today's show. I just want to mention before we start that we have a video recording, a video version, if you prefer, of the show available at redice.tv and on our Red Ice TV YouTube channel for those of you guys only tuning into the radio version. So our guest is Kristoffer Dulny. He's the editor-in-chief of nordic.altright.com. He's a former budget chief for the Sweden Democrats. He's a political activist since 2009, and he has a bachelor's degree in law. We are going to be talking about the political future in Sweden and the meta-political struggle as well. Really good show ahead, so stay tuned. Kristoffer Dulny, welcome back. It's good to have you here again.
Good to be back again.
Excellent. So last time you were with us, we were doing this roundtable, you know, about Sweden's national holiday, midsummers, and all that kind of stuff. And our audience didn't really get the chance to kind of get to know you a little bit and hear more about your backstory. Tell us first how you got onto some of this, because you were part of the Sweden Democrats for, I don't know exactly how long, you can tell us more about that, but there was kind of a scandal, I guess, eventually, and you were, I don't know if you were pushed out of the party or if you resigned, but tell us a little bit about that story and how you ended up with the Sweden Democrats initially.
Well, I got red-pilled on the immigration question, first of all, in 2009. And I was away traveling in Asia, you know, just to find myself, so to speak. And I came back and I got involved in the Sweden Democrats immediately. And this was in 2009, before they even entered the parliament. So if you were sort of a decent person enough, you could make a career quickly out of it. So I got pushed into all of these positions, and then when we finally entered the parliament in September 2010, I got hired as a press secretary, and then I got promoted and promoted again, and I ended up in the inner circle in the Sweden Democrats. So I was, you could say I was the party leader, Jimmy Åkesson's right hand for a couple of years.
Nice.
So I got to take part in all of the inner strategic meetings, all the plannings, all the big moves. I was a part of this as well. So I get to learn a lot. The thing is that these people are sort of special. We don't share the same background. And I never felt that I could really understand them in a way. So I tried to launch my own thing in the party, meaning I became the president of the Stockholm chapter. So I was sort of focusing more on that. And in 2014, a week before the general elections, I got doxxed by, you could say the whole total media core of Sweden. So this was the biggest news for, I guess, a day or two. And yeah, what happened, they found some comments that I had written on the different internet forums where I complain about immigrants. These were old comments, some of them 5-6 years old, and they were taken out of their context. But, I mean, you know how the media works. This was a hit job. They wanted to remove someone they viewed as a potential, you know, up-and-coming profile in Sweden Democrats, meaning me. So when I got doxxed, I had to make a tactical retreat. So I resigned on all my official positions, but I maintained employment at the parliament for the Sweden Democrats. So I worked there for 2.5 more years, and then I resigned by my own will about 2 months ago to start to work with the alternative right.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've always wanted to know a little bit more about the kind of inner mechanics and workings of the Sweden Democrats. I always found that very interesting. I always wanted to try to understand how, you know, how deeply involved are they really in some questions? How dedicated are they in terms of protecting Swedish culture and the people and all that kind of stuff? What would you say to that? I mean, is there anything that did you have at that time very much in common with your peers in the political party, or were you kind of like way ahead of them, red-pilled on so many other issues that they were just not up to speed with, or how would you describe that generally?
I would describe the leadership as national socialists, and I don't mean national socialists in the way I mean they're not German national socialists. They're Swedish national socialists. You know exactly what I mean.
I do, yeah.
Sweden has been a national socialist up until the 1980s, meaning we were ruled by social democrats, but they had a nationalistic policy. And then they sold us out to the global elite. And then enter multiculturalism and liberalism. So they are national socialists of the old Swedish school. I am 100% sure that they are red-pilled on race and also on the JQ.
Oh, really?
Yes. I've never talked directly with them because that's sort of the dynamic in the Sweden Democrats. You don't talk about these things. You don't talk about race. You don't talk about JQ. It's sort of understood between the lines. You can criticize famous Jewish journalists and you can wink-wink about it. At the same time, of course, they are red pill on the race question. They understand that there's a difference between us and them. They even had it in the party program. They still have a formula. They still have a sentence in their strategic document where they talk about a human essence. That there's something that separates us, and this is a human essence, and that's just a code word for race. And this is still in their strategic documents. So, yeah, 100%, absolutely, they are red-pilled on these issues. They don't talk about these issues. They don't even talk about these issues with each other because they're paranoid. They don't trust each other. And this is a part in due to the fact that there have been many dropouts from the party, and these political dropouts have gone directly to the press, and they have tried to sell information, which has been extremely harmful for the political party. And of course, that's something I would never, ever even dream about doing, because if you're hurting the Sweden Democrats, you are in a way hurting our cause as well. So they're extremely paranoid. And this is completely understandable. If you, as Jimmy Åkesson, the party leader, have done, if you work in this environment where you have a whole establishment against you, for a decade and even more, I think he's been involved in the party for 2 decades, you get sort of like damaged by it. And he also, the party leader, he also had a break recently, about one and a half year ago, where he got a nervous breakdown.
That's right.
So he had to take medication for it, and he was away for a while. And when he came back, he wasn't himself as much. And this is when the chief strategist, you could compare him to a poor man's Stephen Bannon, and that's right. Matias Karlsson.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he sort of lashed on and took a firm grip of the political party, and this has resulted in a number of different things, chiefly among them the fact that the youth wing of the party got thrown out.
That's right. I was just going to bring that up.
2015.
Yep, that's right. And that's,
yeah, you have it over there.
That's right. And that's indicative. Here's the headline, guys. And of course, this is a little bit indicative of why many people have reprehension about the Sweden Democrats, why many nationalists in Sweden have reprehension about them, because it seems that they're just trying to, they back down and they, you know, they don't take that firm stance that I personally feel that you need at this time. But since you've seen it on the inside, do you feel that their tactic to kind of, I don't know if back down is the right word, but obviously they're cucking on many issues. Is that successful? Has that been over the years successful to kind of mainstream it more and more and more to a certain extent?
There was certainly debate on it, and I was torn on the issue myself. But then something happened in 2015, and that is Trump. The Trump campaign started. So from the summer 2015, when he was the political primaries was going on in America, I saw this man going up against the whole system, and he didn't back down. Every time something happened, he doubled down on his issues. He also had a pretty firm stance against the media. He made media part of his campaign. We have all seen this manifest itself in many different ways. And this really got me red-pilled on the tactical question when it comes to dealing with media, dealing with establishment. And I saw something very effective going on here. And so this was sort of the final straw for me when it comes to Sweden Democrats, because I have always tried to push the party in that direction. And when Trump showed us all that it not only works, you can actually become the president of the most powerful country in the world by pointing out that the media and establishment are our enemies. For me, that was the final straw, and I tried to bring this up in our party circles. And I was actually counter-signaled by Jimmy Åkesson himself. A funny episode is that I used to wear these MAGA hats at the office. And Jimmy directly confronted me and told me this wasn't appropriate. And this was after Trump had won the election as well.
Oh really?
So he was not just cucking, he was cucking and counter-signaling Trump in the media. And I thought, okay, well, this is a strategy because Trump is immensely unpopular in Sweden thanks to the media campaign. I mean, he really is. So I thought this was a strategy, just to, have a good appearance outwards. But then when he was cucking internally, I realized that he doesn't actually understand what has happened. And if you don't understand what I think is a political earthquake in the Western world with Trump being elected, if you don't understand the implications and the strategy of that, then I can't take part in this charade anymore. Like, if you really think that cucking for the media establishment is the way forward, I can't represent Sweden Democrat in that. So that was the final straw for me. That's when I decided I have to do something else. I have to be a part of the alt-right movement. I was already, in forums. I was discussing with people. I was in Manhattan during the 2016 elections, and I met up with the TRS crowd, the right stuff, this crowd. So I was involved in it internally, but I hadn't really contributed anything to the alt-right externally. And I thought, I have to do something about this because we have a tremendous momentum and somebody has to step up and try to do something in Sweden for the alt-right. So that's when I decided I needed to launch my own thing.
Yeah, and that was just, about 4 or 5 months ago, right? Maybe even less.
Oh, we've been running our thing since end of May.
Yeah, so it's not that long.
2 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nordiska Alternativhögern, the Nordic alt-right, that's kind of a sub-branch, really, of alt-right.com, of course. You guys had a press conference. We didn't get around to actually compiling all the video material for that one yet. We've been just so been tremendously busy.
Oh, yeah.
But tell us about that, the press conference a little bit, and kind of what came out of that. What has some of the, since you were kind of in the limelight a little bit with the Sweden Democrats, and then you move over to this side, if you will, how has the media responded to that?
I would say I was surprised at the immense interest in our launch because we actually dissed some of the biggest newspapers, the equivalent of New York Times, Dagens Nyheter, another big newspaper, Aftonbladet. We didn't invite them, but they somehow found out about it and they came anyway. So we decided to let them in. So I think we had the most of the biggest newspapers and media outlets represented at this press conference. And me and Daniel Fiberg, we decided of Arctos, which is a co-founder of the Nordic Alt-Right, we decided that we're going to do this our way. We're not going to have a stiff press conference in some fancy hotel. So we decided to just have a lunch pretty nice restaurant. It's called the Press Club, actually, which is funny as well. So we just ordered some beers and we shitposted with the journalist for about 1.5 hours. And it was interesting because they have no idea what's going on. They are totally clueless about the alt-right, even though everything that has happened in 2015 and 2016, they don't understand this. It's not a part of their world. They cannot see a right-wing metapolitical movement. That's not something that they're used to. They're used to traditionalist or maybe even conservatives, social conservatives as the Sweden Democrats is. They are used to right-wing politicians talking about museums, opera, and trying to revive old Swedish traditions. They are not used to a right-wing that's culturally relevant. They're not used to a right-wing that actually discuss modern culture, but from a right-wing perspective. So they have no idea how to handle us.
Yeah, the little encounters I've had with them, that's definitely the case. It was one of those expose in Dagens Nyheter about Friberg, myself, and a couple of other people involved in Ultra Tour Westman, of course. And it was just like, I mean, it's the usual bullshit. It's the usual, you know, kind of just name calling and flinging as much crap as they can on us to make us look bad and everything else. But I think you're right. I don't think they really understand why it's on the rise and the mechanics of it, why it's being successful. And I think, though, that they're slowly starting to take it seriously, as they have in America as well. Initially, they thought that they could just kind of brush it to the side, I don't know, make fun of it or just kind of, you know, throw the usual names on it. But that hasn't worked. And I think it's slowly beginning to dawn on them that this is something to be counted with, a real movement which is going to have tremendous political leeway in, you know, I don't know, a few years from now. But what do you think that kind of question that we've seen in the States with the alt-right, how is that going to translate in Sweden? Is that going to, are the journalists going to begin to catch on there as well eventually, do you think?
Well, we have our version of SPLC, which is Expo. And their argument against us not succeeding was that you cannot import something from America and make it work in Sweden, which, first of all, we're not doing it. Second of all, the statement is hilarious, considering that I would say well above 90% of our pop culture is somehow directly imported from America.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's not going to fly. And second of all, the alt-right is definitely, has always had a huge European crowd and a huge Swedish crowd as well.
Yeah, and roots in
just
Europe.
Look at Red, right? Yeah, just look at Red Eyes, look at altright.com, which you're a part of, Daniel Friberg. We have Arctos, which is the biggest alt-right publishing company. So, I mean, there's always been a huge Swedish presence. There's been a huge Swedish audience as well. So this is not something that we just saw in America and say, hey, let's import this into Sweden. It's been a cooperation. You would see Richard Spencer, which coined the term alt-right, who talks about his influence from the new right in France. So I would say that this is more of a white thing than a European or American thing. And we have our different profiles. The Nordic alt-right, we're talking about issues in a different context. Sweden, I mean, there's a different context to be seen in Sweden versus America. But we're essentially, the issues are the same. Mass immigration, displacement of whites, the displacement of gender roles. Of course, the JQ is always relevant as well. So all of these struggles, all of the key issues we have in common. And that's why I think it's so easy for us now to cooperate together. You don't see the divisions as you've seen. I mean, just compare it to a couple of years ago when Obama was president and when the alt-right didn't really have any traction. American politics and European politics has always differed in a way, and there's always been this distance towards each other. And this has just completely been thrown out thanks to Trump being elected, because now they have a champion as well as we have our champions in the parliaments, even though I'm not a huge fan of the Sweden Democrats. Obviously, there's no other alternative. And it's saying something about Sweden that the biggest political party now, I saw a poll from yesterday, showed the Sweden Democrats being the biggest political party with a few percentage down to the competitor, the Social Democrats. So it's saying something about Sweden that the biggest political party is the Sweden Democrats. And we also have this burgeoning alt-right movement. And I think our job is, in some parts, of course, the metapolitical story, but also trying to push the social conservatives towards the right, towards our way.
Yeah, exactly. That's very encouraging, of course. It is heading in the right direction. Here's one of the stories from the local just from yesterday about how Sweden Democrats are overtaking the moderates, Sweden's second largest party after that poll. But yeah, Christopher, let me return to that issue, though, that you mentioned, which is a very good one, a good point, a good discussion point, that we've pretty much had the same template of, you know, cultural Marxism, PC, you know, restrictions of free speech, all these issues, mass immigration. That's been put on most European countries and Western countries, including, of course, you know, New Zealand, Australia, almost in a very similar boilerplate kind of pattern, which means, of course, that the solutions we come up with in certain, you know, individual countries almost can be exported and imported and applied accordingly, because it's so, whether we like it or not, it's so homogenized and so globalized right now that we're seeing it's a nationalist movement that is arising, but on some level it is also international, which is kind of, I guess, heresy to a certain extent, but you get what I'm saying, right?
I like the concept of global nationalism.
Yeah.
Because we have to realize a few things. We do live in a globalized world. That is true. And I think we have to use globalism against globalism itself. And we can do this in a number of ways. Internet is, of course, the most obvious solution. We can use the fact that it's easy to travel. It's cheap to travel these days. So we can meet up at all these different conferences and happenings all over the world. Personally, I will be at the Unite the Right rally on August the 12th in Charlottesville, which I think is the biggest gathering of nationalists, white nationalists in America in recent history. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I know you will be there as well, I think, and
yep.
Daniel Friberg and many others. And I can do this because it's easy, it's cheap to travel. I can do this because we have things like Airbnb, so it's easy and cheap to book accommodation. And this is thanks to globalism, let's be honest. But I also think, if you look at the history of internet, you remember as well as I do, and many others who are watching now, that every website, every news website, you could go and you could comment on their articles. It was open. They encouraged this reader interaction because they thought the readers were on their side. And then they quickly found out that the readers have actually a very different take when it comes to issues like immigration, when it comes to issues like generals, etc. So then they had to invent this narrative of internet hate. I don't know what the good English term for this, but that's what they call it in Swedish, at least. So they had to invade this narrative about hateful comments. And so they closed down essentially all the comment sections. I mean, when you go to the internet today, you don't expect to be able to comment on these news articles. But that was the thing until pretty recently. So that's also saying something about how we use their platforms for our purposes. I mean, you have YouTube, of course, you have Facebook, etc. And it's constantly an uphill struggle. But I'm more white-pilled than black-pilled on these platforms, because I do see that they allow us to be on the platforms as long as we adhere to some of their principles. I mean, Red Eyes is on YouTube, Alt-Right is on YouTube, the same on Twitter. As long as you're civil in your tone and you don't troll too much, they actually do allow our viewpoints to be broadcasted on these platforms. So I don't think they're just going to do a complete and total shutdown of us, at least not if we're smart enough.
No, exactly. I don't think they can, and there's always ways around it. There's always different words and things you can use until they discover what the new word is, right? So it's a kind of a, I don't know, I've always seen this as kind of bacteria and antibodies, just like, you know, warfare, and it's always going to happen. There's always going to be different systems that's going to arise to try to kind of combat the other side, if you will. So I'm not too worried about that, and I think that if they allow people on there, we're going to be able to be on there, you know. So I wouldn't be too worried about it, but it means that, of course, that we're kind of gaining ground. And I've always had this issue with, not only in Sweden and the Swedish journalists, but in America too, that they just can't, I don't know what your take on this, but they're not only childish in their attitudes, but it's like they just cannot accept it, that this is something that exists in the world right now. They can't accept that Trump won. They can't accept that something like the alt-right exists and is gaining traction. I think this, their issue to just dismiss it as something which is going to go away, is just not going to work for them anymore. I mean, it's remarkable to see how they're continuing to go after Trump, even after he's clearly, you know, backpedaled on certain issues, he's slowed down on certain issues. But it's just this idea that he ended up in the position that he did. It's out of this world to them, and they just cannot understand that this is actually the opinions that people have. And they're sick of immigration. They don't want it anymore. They don't want globalization. They don't want their jobs to be handed off to other people coming in. This is what's happening. The populism is on the rise, and their attitudes and their measures and techniques to try to bring us down has clearly failed, right? I mean, they're not gaining any traction here. They're the ones on the losing end of this, right?
There are a number of things going on right now. I would call it, I think we're in the early stages, or maybe we're right in the middle of the big shift. Because you've seen it as well as I've seen that some of the smarter, more social media savvy political thinkers and analytics and etc., they are shifting their narrative. They are becoming, at least publicly, more skeptic to the concept of mass immigration, to the concept of different cultures living together in a multicultural society. So you've seen them shifting positions, oh so slowly, but they're moving towards a more, I would say, reality-based views of the current situation. But yeah, yes, you are right. There are some people who are so heavily invested in this project that they will basically go down with the ship. And for these people, I take delight in it. I have to say, these people are feeling like they're living in a constant nightmare. And they're waking up and every day is worse than the day before. And they actually are becoming black-pilled. And I also think this is really important for us. We have to black-pill them as much
Definitely.
As possible.
Yep.
We have two things we have to do. We have to white pill our own guys, because there is a lot of shit going on. And so, I mean, I have a pretty white pill perspective on the future. I even named my podcast The White Pill. So I feel that's really important to keep it light and to keep our sense of humor that we have in the alt-right. But at the same time, we really have to, as much as we can, black pill our opponents, because they're on the losing side now. And we cannot show them any mercy, because, as you said, the intolerant left, it's sort of a meme, but it also really checks out, because they are not ceding any ground voluntarily. Everything we have to fight for. We have to fight for it tooth and nail. There's really nothing to back down from here. We cannot show our political opponents any mercy at all. There's no understanding to be had with these people. They have to be crushed. That's what we have to do to them. We have to crush them. Yeah. Metaphorically, of course.
Of course.
I don't encourage violence. So that's what we have to do. I realized this pretty quickly when I started to engage in politics, that these people who are defined as our political opponents, they have one goal and one goal only, and that is to disenfranchise us and not give us a platform or a voice. They are not interested in listening to our arguments, and so I decided that I would just try to go after them in any way I can. There's nothing to be listened. There's no conversations to be had with these people.
No, I share their opinion. I've thought about that for a long time in terms of I was always from this perspective. Let's debate with these people. Let's have the discussion. Let's figure out who's right and who's wrong and what works and what doesn't work. But no, all they have been interested in is to ruin. What has been built here, right? They're a deconstructive force. They don't come with anything which is like, here we're going to offer. Well, they come with the promises of a utopian paradise future, of course, but they're not really interested in that. I think that they're more interested in destroying traditional conservative nationalist societies, and if that means taking themselves down with the ship, as you said, then that's what they're going to do. And if we don't. Here's the kicker, I think. If we don't step up to the plate and make sure that we're in a situation where we actually, we take over control, basically, in one way or another, they are going to destroy everything that our forefathers built in Sweden. I mean, they're going to ruin it financially. They're going to ruin it demographically. And these people, I just see them as insane people. And if we don't do our job to, restore order to this chaos, then it's rather our fault than theirs. They're just insane, as far as I'm seeing. Well, how do you view this?
Well, I always love the fact that they are projecting their own feelings towards us. So they're telling us that we're scared, when in fact they are scared. They are scared about the development they are seeing now. And I also think it's very true that if you look at everything, I mean, you could look at Swedish media, you could look at American media, CNN. You could look at they have this project here that they call Politism, which is catered towards leftist youth. But the thing is that they have no audience, because they're actually, the youth are not interested in these politically correct ideas. You either have total right wing lunatics like Generation Cyclone. And then you have the other side, which is the extreme leftists, Antifa, etc. And there's really nothing between anymore. The center politics have died. So I think the extremes are going to push the political discourse in this coming generation. And that's where you need to be if you want to actually be a part of the solution or whatever it's going to be. You have to be on the extremes. You cannot be in the center, because it's not happening in the center anymore. People are black-pilled on center politics. It doesn't really offer any solutions. If you look at liberal democracy, what everyone is seeing is just this slow decline. It's slowly declining. Everything is becoming a little worse day by day. And so there's no beliefs in this kind of system that we're dealing with today. And I also see that, I mean, we have all these people who are extremely talented. Most of the people who are in the alt-right are doing it completely free because they have convictions. But I mean, if we could pool some resources into the different projects that we have, we could accomplish more than, I mean, I'm sure that if Red Eyes maybe had 10 times the resources, I think your viewership could greatly exceed that of CNN, which I guess have budgets in the in the millions, if not billions of dollars yearly.
I know.
And that's also
yeah.
saying something. I mean, the audience, We can get a huge audience with next to nothing when it comes to resources.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very frustrating. But, I think it's the death throes of this system. It's the last measures. I mean, if you look at the ads on CNN, how they fund themselves, it's all like, you know, medical corporations. It's all like, you know, pills and like burgers and, you know, auto insurance. You know, it's just like, I don't know who, how they're, why they're putting money into this. But as you said, I mean, they're not only their credibility is falling, their viewership is falling as well.
They have the same old narrative and the same old solutions to new problems. I think it's very interesting how long it's interesting to see how long this charade is gonna keep up, because as we saw with CNN, this latest outrage from CNN when Trump posted an image of him body slamming a guy with someone photoshopped CNN on his head, and they actually were insulted and tried to campaign against Trump on this issue, and it just started this meme war. I think I haven't seen this kind of memetic warfare since the elections, actually, where people were just slamming CNN from everywhere. So I think they're in a vulnerable position, and they are showing it right now. And it's, to be honest, it's hilarious.
It is. It's amazing that this is the kind of stuff that goes on in the mainstream now. I mean, it shows how incredibly powerful it is. It is insane.
Yeah.
And of course, we can work with that. But it's as you say, it's like nothing is as it once was anymore. Everything is up in the air right now. And it's almost, I feel, it's whoever kind of can grab the attention of the moment and whoever can be creative and whoever can be there and strike at the right time can utilize this to their advantage. And I think that that's what we have to do. As you said, we can't be depressed about this. We can't be sitting here and moping and moaning and saying there's no use, yada, yada, yada. No, we have to jump on this like it's the greatest thing ever. And I try to always turn it around in that way too and say, you know what? It is the greatest thing ever. I mean, it's, we have a chance to be part of turning this one of the biggest hurdles and challenges in probably our history, in Western history, to be part of that battle and to do something which is truly, you know, meaningful in that sense. After living in a globalized, homogenized, commercialized existence, which had everything but, you know, meaning, basically. So I think it's a wonderful time to be part of this. I think it's a wonderful time to be able to engage and be a part of the meme war, as it were.
I mean, in a way, the internet, it's a democratization of ideas. As you said, anyone with a computer and MS Paint can do a meme or can, you know, just put an idea out there, package it in a nice way, and just put it out on the internet. And if he's the smartest guy around when it comes to that certain issue, this meme or this idea will then spread all over the internet. And he can be seen, and his ideas can be seen and heard by the audience is in the billions, right? And this is something that I think, because now we're seeing suggestions of legislation against free speech all over Europe. I mean, we do have free speech in Europe. It's not exactly the same as in America, but it's also very hard for them to police free speech thanks to the internet. So I think they have realized far too late that the democratization of ideas on the internet was not a good thing for the establishment. That's just how it is. And so they're trying to curb it in different ways, but the cat is out of the bag, and it's not going back in. I am not worried at all about them trying to shut down free speech, not at all, because there will always be platforms, and as you said, there will always be different code words for our ideas that we can put out there. And you have some like Pajits in India that they hire to police free speech. But I mean, honestly, they're not really going to understand what we're talking about. So, no. I mean, they can curb the most obvious slurs. They can curb the most obvious memes and articles, etc. But the alt-right have this code and language, which serves two purposes, as I see it. The first one is that you have to invest some time to understand what we're talking about. So that means that we're keeping the most obvious infiltrators and the lazy people and the dumb people outside our ideas and our movement. And the second one is that it also prevents us from being censored. Because when we use a sort of coded language when we talk about things, they don't understand these Pajits that are running Facebook's IT service in India. They don't understand what the hell they're looking at. it makes us unstoppable in that sense.
Yeah, that's a good good point. I like that. And as you said, it's like a whole subculture, of course, with the words and with the meaning of things. And it's I think even when some people engage in them to try to understand them, there's actually a lot of people that have been converted by them, it seems, right? They just try to understand it alone, and they see our point of view. So it's very interesting. And I think that's why they're panicking in the way they are. They realize that something is happening. It's just catching on. And they think that the solution to it's going to be just to like shut down the internet, control it with filters, block certain websites, you know, fire people from their accounts, deplatform them, and etc. But you know, do they think we're going to give up and just okay, I was censored, I'll just give up and walk away? We'll be 10 times more charged up to turn this thing around when they do what they do. So you know, it's like whatever they do, it gives us more power right now. That's what I feel.
Yes, and I also think it's interesting because if you look at the mainstream narratives, we have this sort of inverted morality where the slave is to be upheld as the most supreme human being and the master is like down below and not worthy of attention. So this morality this is the morality we're living in. But our people, we who are sort of producing content and are out there, we have more of the anti-fragility mindset, where every time they attack us, we get more excited and we want to accomplish more things. We're actually enjoying having to struggle for something. It builds us up as human being, as men, and it also motivates us. So every time they try to attack us, we actually grow stronger. We're becoming smarter. We're becoming better at pushing our message to the mainstream audience. So we actually enjoy the struggle. That's why we don't like to be on Gab, for instance, because Gab, you cannot engage with mainstream media. You cannot engage with normies.
Right.
So we like to be on these platforms where you can engage others, like Richard Spencer is talking about engaging people outside our circles. That's where we get our best results. So we're actually a pretty extroverted movement in us trying to meet up with people who don't share our ideas, and maybe just to antagonize them or troll them, but also, as you said, once people try to understand what the alt-right is and once they read about us, I definitely see them being red pill on certain issues, because I mean, let's be honest, the mainstream, the narratives that are floating out there, it's the things that you learn in middle school, and then you don't think about it again, and then you think that this when you engage someone who has a different opinion or writing opinion, you use these arguments, but these arguments are not really arguments. They're just like things you learned back when you were 10 years old. They don't hold any weight at all.
Right, exactly. So let's do this. Let's take a short little break here in just a few minutes. I'm going to continue actually talk more with you about some of the biggest data leak in Swedish history, which is pretty interesting. I've always seen the Swedish political system as kind of a kindergarten if you compare it to the rest of the world. It's a very, I don't know, it's just childish, and it's just like nonsense in many regards. And this is more proof of it, of course, which is very important to point that out. But before we do that, Christopher, please tell us about your involvement in the Nordic alt-right. If there's something you'd like to our audience to know about, how that they, I don't know, can engage, how they can support the work that you and the others do there. And if there's anything, I don't know, upcoming or something. You mentioned, of course, the Charlottesville event. That's going to be a big thing. We're going to be there. We're going to be live streaming that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But anything else that's going on that we should be made aware of?
Well, first, Daniel Friberg will attend Amren and do a speech there. So I highly recommend going there and watching him. I cannot attend, unfortunately. I will be joining up later. So that's something that's going on. And of course, me and him, as you said, will also be on the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville on the 12th of August. So check that out as well. I think he's doing a speech there as well. And other things that are going on. I mean, we launched 2 months ago. We are basically we're an outlet. We're a part of the altright.com franchise, so to speak. So this is the Nordic outlet, which means that we're writing mostly in Swedish, and we're constantly looking to expand. If there are any Norwegians or Danes out there who want us to syndicate their content or articles, feel free to contact us. You can find the contact information on our website. We're going to start to produce sort of video commentary as well. And I guess, I mean, now the election in Sweden is in 2018. So we're going into this election cycle now in autumn. So we're definitely going to have a lot more traction. Our ideas are going to be seen and heard. And we're also going to take part in the mainstream debate. Our goal is for people, when things happen, people want to know, what does the alt-right think? What is their take on all this? So I think we got to just intensify our presence in the social media. We're just like trying things out now in the summer. It's not a lot of things happening here in Sweden. Everyone's on vacation. So I know how it is because I used to work in the parliament from the middle of June until the middle of September, people are actually on vacation.
Right.
There's nothing happening.
Wow.
And it's pretty insane. You have three months of nothingness. So I think it's especially funny when this scandal that we're going to talk about happened now, because I know how pissed off people are because they have to take a break from their vacation to go in and actually work for their taxpayers' money. So
yeah,
but I mean there's a lot of things going on, and I hope that we will see Poland.alt-right.com, Deutsche.alt-right.com. I hope we will see a lot of different alt-right.com platforms in the future.
Indeed, exactly. So yeah, guys, head on over there, check it out. A lot of good stuff, and of course, it's really just gaining momentum right now. It's very fresh, so to speak. It's just kind of getting going, and there's a lot of things I think that will come out of this, of course. And there's a election in Norway. We talked with one of the guys over there recently. There's things that we can do to kind of pull our resources together, and whatever country is in an election swing, we can have this international network that we're talking about of nationalists help out, participate in the warfare, if you will, the meme warfare, and direct your attention and focus on those countries that have the election. That could even be enough to reach the headlines in whatever country we're talking about. So there's a lot of different tactics, and we'll continue to talk more about that with Christopher as well in a second. But yeah, nordic.altright.com, that's the website. Stay tuned. We're just going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with more. We'll see you on the other side. Well, ladies and gentlemen, join us for the second segment. Together with Christopher Dulny, we are going to discuss the unfolding scandal of the biggest data breach in Swedish history. I mean, it is data breach to a certain extent. It's not really hacking. I guess it's openly neglect and screw-up on the part of the Transportation Authority of Sweden, our version of the DMV, basically. Tons of sensitive data on citizens and military personnel and military vehicles and all kinds of stuff has been basically handed over to foreign governments in an effort to, save a few bucks, basically. So this is a big story unfolding right now in Sweden, and it could have huge repercussions. We're going to look at the bigger picture of that, and of course many other topics related to the kind of work that Christopher has been involved in. So if you want to check that out, get a membership at redicemembers.com and tune into the second part of this show. Make sure that you support us so that we can continue. We have over 1,300 shows in the archives on the members' website. And of course, don't forget to check out past shows too. Tons of programs from our early days on metaphysics and conspiracy and more esoteric subjects to our more pro-white, anti-globalist, and pro-nationalist shows that we do today. With a membership, you also get access to all our videos and previous live shows. You can watch when we do the broadcast live, when we record it, and also exclusive access to other videos that we do. Check it out. It's only €6 per month. That's about $6 right now. You can subscribe from 3 months all the way up to 2 years. We also have a 3-month recurring option for you. We have tons of more stuff coming out here in the next couple of days, so keep your eyes on redicemembers.com and redice.tv. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your support. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable I dare not go. To right the unrightable wrong. To love pure and chaste from afar. To try when your arms are too weary. To reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far. To fight for the right, without question or pause. To be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars. That my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this. That one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove